which lumbered everywhere between and through the buildings, the creatures often pausing and turning to examine prone figures before unhurriedly pacing on. Perhaps 50 of the Banes wandered the immediate area from Davian's count, never in groups and never seemingly with any particular pattern or purpose. They just patrolled. So long as the prisoners didn't threaten them and didn't gather in too large a number, the Algoriate completely ignored them. Until they didn't deliver their share of metal, of course. Davian shuddered at the memory of what Raelith had told him about the consequences of not meeting quota too often.
"Who in fates are you?"
Davian flinched. He'd been lost in thought as he walked through the short tunnel and hadn't heard anyone approach.
"My name is Shadet," he said as he turned, doing his best to speak politely.
The tone of the initial question had been unduly aggressive, and he suspected he already knew who was asking it. The hulking figure before him smiled forbiddingly as their eyes met. The man who was presumably Marish towered over Davian by almost a foot, his height matched by a muscle-bound bulk that was one of the most naturally intimidating that Davian had ever seen. Just outside the tunnel stood two more men of almost equal stature, bathed in the red moonlight. Marish's eyes glittered as they slid toward the pail, taking note of its contents.
"Who are you with, Shadet?"
Davian kept his breathing steady, calming himself.
"Jed."
"Raelith indisposed today?"
Marish waved lazily at the pail in Davian's hand, clearly not caring whether he received an answer.
"About a third of that will do."
"A third?"
Davian looked at him disbelievingly.
"No, you're right. I misspoke. A half."
Marish's gaze returned to settle on Davian calmly, and he tapped a thick wooden pole in his hand as the two men behind him shifted menacingly.
"I don't know how things work in whichever section you came from, but here you will find that we have very little patience for those who waste our time."
Davian barely bit back a retort, remembering Raelith's warning. Marish continued to watch him as he gestured. One of the other men stepped forward, dropping an empty pail emphatically next to Davian's full one.
"Half," repeated the hulking man. "You fill. We'll choose which bucket to take with us."
Davian swallowed his anger and forced a nod, carefully taking chunks of metal from his pail and placing them in Marish's. His fury burned hotter and hotter as he felt the three smug sets of eyes on him, but he focused on the work, reminding himself with each motion of what Raelith had said. He had to pick his battles. Soon enough he was done, having split the scraps as evenly as he could. Marish picked up the pail closest to him, then tarried.
"You think we're traitors? Scum," he observed, studying Davian's expression.
"You think you aren't?"
Davian replied, the words out of his mouth before he could stop them. Marish's eyes narrowed.
"This is the world we live in now, Shadet. Nobody is getting out. Nobody is going home. This," he gestured around them, "is where we are all going to die. So if I have a way to not spend my days scrounging through ruins, in constant fear of buildings collapsing and dark and wild banes, then I am going to take it."
He delivered his explanation calmly, as if it were the most logical thing in the world. Davian stared at him, then forced out a mocking laugh. He knew it was the wrong thing to do, but this was just too hard to ignore.
"Fates," he chuckled bitterly. "What a wonderful justification for being a disgusting human being."
The blow caught him by surprise, despite his having known that he was inviting it. A backhand to the head, hard enough to snap him around and send him sprawling, his vision nothing but dizzying white light for several seconds. He choked out a groan, tensing for more, but nothing came. When his vision cleared, Marish was looming over him, expression dark.
"I normally don't like to injure people. It is of no benefit to anyone," he growled. "But do not make the mistake of thinking that I will not. It has been a while since an example was made, so I wouldn't try any harder to convince me that one is due."
He nodded to one of the others, a light-skinned man with a completely bald pate and thick beard.
Hold! Grab another few pieces. Payment for the unpleasantness.
Davian gasped another lungful of air as he tried to recover, silently berating himself but biting back any argument as Auld picked out several more chunks of metal from his pail. He was exhausted, frustrated, not a little concerned about his situation, and he'd allowed it all to shorten his temper. Large as these men were, he could probably take on all three with the help of Essence, but he knew no one else in the camp was gifted, which meant that revealing his ability here would inevitably attract the wrong kind of attention. The smart thing to do was to accept this, infuriatingly unjust though it was, and be on his way. He would need to apologize to Raelith and the others later for losing more metal than he should have, too. He didn't bother using essence to clear his head, staying down until Marish and his thugs wandered off, talking and laughing together as if nothing had happened. He wished again that he could just touch Khan. He would have had little compunction in controlling Marish. Fates, but he hated the sensation of being helpless. Even in his cell in Ilshan Gathdelteth, he'd never felt quite like this. In fact, he couldn't remember feeling this bad since Kaladel, practicing to pass his trials. He eventually picked himself up, dusting off his already ripped clothing and peering bleakly into his pail. It was closer to a quarter full now, barely worth the grueling trek to deliver it. He hefted the significantly lighter pail and squared his shoulders. Now came the dangerous part. He trudged forward again, and soon his pulse quickened as he spotted Istharis, at least Davian assumed that it was she, in the distance, the glistening black serpentine body unmistakable as she slithered alongside the lake. He made a beeline for the creature, doing his best not to shy away as a patrolling Algoriat wandered close to his position, its eyeless gaze roving, needle-like teeth dripping dark red. Davian kept walking, his neck itching as the Algoriat moved on behind him, though it was Istharis herself who was commanding his attention now. This was it. The creature had his description. The only question now was whether Raelith was right in his assertion that the Dargaethan had difficulty distinguishing between humans. Istharis looked up as Davian approached, noting the pail he was carrying.
"Bring it," she hissed peremptorily,
sounding bored as she slithered off toward the intact building. Davian did as he was told, trailing after the Dargaethan and into the deep shadows of the structure. He squinted as his eyes adjusted to the meager red light filtering in through the windows, taking in a surprisingly ordered space. Three reinforced barrels filled with metal sat in one corner, while several more sat in another, these with the gray-green tips of bitterroot sticking out of the tops. The rest of the space was spartan but clean, entirely empty aside from the dozen Algoriat lumbering aimlessly around the interior. Each of them stopped as Davian and Istharis entered, turning to watch silently. Istharis ignored them, reaching out with a muscular arm and taking the pail from him, hefting it as if it were nothing to her, which Davian knew it probably wasn't. The creatures were far stronger than any human.
"A small return?"
Istharis's gaze went to Davian and lingered there, her expression turning almost quizzical. Davian did his best not to look nervous.
"Half rations,"
Istharis said finally, turning to empty the pail into one of the barrels, then slithering over and dropping a few bitterroot stems into it. Davian nodded, knowing not to argue, then dithered.
"You know which team?"
Istharis hissed impatiently.
"Raelith, yes?"
"Yes," said Davian, hiding his relief.
Istharis stared at Davian, and he had the distinct impression that she was confused. The creature shook her serpentine head from side to side in evident irritation.
"Go," she hissed. "It will be credited."
Davian turned and resisted the urge to flee, instead collecting the pail and walking outside again as calmly as he could, heart pounding disconcertingly against his chest. He flinched as a peal rang out loud behind him, then twisted to stare at the tower, one of the few structures still standing tall along the side of the lake. Crimson spilled off the swinging bell, though he couldn't see who or what was doing the ringing. The iron in there would probably have fed a team for weeks, but the Dargaethan had clearly prioritized its function over whatever value the metal itself held for them. His gaze switched absently to the stagnant spots of light surrounding the crimson crescent that hung dead in the sky, the same as always. Almost absently, he focused and reached out for Khan. He did it several times each day. He wasn't certain, but it felt as if he were getting closer and closer to touching it again, as if every mental stretch inched him nearer. He released a pent-up breath after a moment, ignoring the brief flood of frustration. It was there, so close that it felt like his straining fingers were brushing against its surface. But he still couldn't grasp it, couldn't use it. He sighed, then started the long trek to camp. Chapter 18. Weir sat in his office in the palace, flicking the sheet of paper in front of him absently. It had only one line written on it, the handwriting familiar but beginning to fade after so long. Almost a year old now. Aelric taken to Nesk, following. Written hurriedly and sealed with the Shane Weir sigil, left with administration to deliver. With so much chaos in the aftermath of the North-South split, it had taken 2 months, as far as he could determine, to reach him, and there was no telling if there had been other messages that hadn't made it at all. He'd tried to find out more, of course. Dedicated resources he probably shouldn't have, though on that account he'd at least had the backing of his uncle and Caroline, who both considered Aelric and Dizia all but family. But there had been nothing. Not then, and not since. He flicked the paper again, partly absently and partly in irritation at his helplessness. Nesk. Andara and its southernmost neighbor had never, in their entire history, been on friendly terms, the Neskians persistent in their claims that the southernmost half of Andara was theirs by ancestral right. The immense mountains of Alai blocked most opportunities for major conflict. They were impassable in winter, and crossing was extraordinarily dangerous during the rest of the year. Even so, regardless of who ruled in Nesk's capital city of Ishai, and that changed every few years without fail, sometimes several times before anyone in Andara even heard about it, there was always a push to attempt another glorious retaking of Neskian land. Even if Dizia had made it past the border, what little Weir knew of the country gave him scant comfort. The Neskians were a bloodthirsty people who traded in strange systems of honor, who outlawed all religion and enslaved their prisoners. Neskian slave traders occasionally crossed into Andara disguised as merchants and taking back Andaran captives, who were highly valued for sport. If Aelric had gone there, it wouldn't have been by choice. He stared at Dizia's note for a long time before shaking his head. Dizia could look after herself, he knew that. Still, he missed her and worried about her. No amount of reasoning in the world could prevent that. He'd played her departure over and over again in his mind, wondering if he should have attempted to stop her. But every time he imagined it, he knew it wouldn't have done any good. Dizia was nothing if not independent. And if she thought Aelric was in trouble, nothing would have prevented her from helping him. And for all Weir wished he could have gone with her, he knew he'd done what was best. Fates, but he hated duty.
She can look after herself, you know.
Weir started at the soft voice from the door, which had opened without his noticing. He turned, giving his younger sister a tired smile and motioning her inside.
Del,
he said affectionately. He glanced back at the paper in his hand, his smile slipping. Deldry knew about the message. She was one of the few people he'd felt comfortable confiding in.
I know, he added quietly. Which is why you're staring at that note and looking like you're going to burst into tears.
retorted Deldry impudently as she shut the door behind her, slipping over to Weir and giving him an impromptu hug around the shoulders before he could react.
"I am not," retorted Weir in a growl, folding the paper carefully and slotting it back into his desk drawer. "And knowing doesn't stop me from worrying," he added.
Deldry gave him a sympathetic smile, observing the stack of pages at the corner of his desk that were covered in precise, elegantly flowing handwriting.
"But it helps for Cousin Caroline?"
"That's different. She likes to keep us informed," Weir understated with vague amusement, glancing at the letters. Those came with almost zealous regularity, and had done so ever since Kara had left 6 months ago. He hadn't really expected her to be so fastidious about staying in touch, but given her extended absence, both he and his uncle had appreciated not having to wonder whether she was all right. He reached over, thumbing absently through his cousin's correspondence as he tried to remember when the next letter was due to arrive. A week, maybe? Publicly, the princess was still managing the official relief efforts in the north, distributing supplies where they were needed and directing assembly-sponsored work crews to help rebuild areas damaged by either the blind or the banes. Or both, in some cases. It was a worthy task, given how hard the Undarran people there had been hit over the past couple of years, not to mention that her publicized, detailed monthly reports to the assembly continued to generate some much-needed goodwill with the populace. Privately, though, the princess was also looking for any clues as to where the Banes had gone. Those letters were sent in secret to Weir every 2 weeks. He shared them with his uncle and Deldry, but no one else. Kara hadn't found anything yet. He could almost feel her frustration emanating from the page sometimes. But it was nice to receive those more personable, familiar messages from her, too. Deldry interrupted his distracted reverie as she threw herself into a chair opposite him, commanding his attention with an exaggerated sigh.
"So, I'm here because Administrator Tullion pulled me aside this morning. She didn't say anything specifically about you, but..."
Weir rolled his eyes.
"But she was trying to turn you against me," he scowled. "Sorry." "Not your fault."
Deldry still smiled, but her eyes were tired, far beyond the sort of weariness a 14-year-old girl should know. The scar across her forehead from Isiliar's attack had remained, an ugly reminder of when he'd nearly lost her.
"At least they're being less obvious now. Nobody's directly accusing you of anything."
"I wish you'd tell me who was doing that."
"And I told you that I would, if I thought it would help. But if I do, you'll keep me away from them, and they'll figure out that I told you. And then the next time when they try and actually do something, it won't involve me."
Deldry smiled brightly at him.
"Seems like if they're going to be treasonous, it would be good for us to know about it before the actual treason part."
Weir snorted.
"Have I mentioned that you're far too good at this? Spending all that time around here with Mother was good for one thing at least."
The mixture of sadness and bitterness in Deldry's tone was undisguised. Weir winced. Deldry had been nothing but loyal to him over the past year, and yet events had conspired to put a gulf between them that had never been there before, one that Weir was unsure could ever be fully bridged. Despite Caroline, Aaron, and Ischel's confirmation of what had happened at the boundary, the narrative around the palace had remained much murkier. That Galadra, who was poised to remove Weir from his position as North Wharton, had gone north to give her son one last chance to prove himself, and had mysteriously died in the process, while he, of course, had lived. It was too easy a target for the more political elements of the city to ignore. Rumors that Weir had somehow planned her death, or at least hoped for it, had sprung up almost immediately upon his return. Despite his fury at those who would whisper such accusations, they had never fully died down, and he had never been able to locate their source, if there even was just one. Deldry maintained that she believed his version of events, and he believed that she did. Still, it was the sort of accusation that was hard to dismiss, hard to stop from worming its way into the back of your mind, no matter how much faith you had in someone.
Thanks for letting me know, he said,
shaking his head and mentally adding Tullian to the list of administrators he couldn't trust, or, more accurately, removing her from the list of those he could. That list was much easier to maintain. He leaned back, sighing.
How's everything else going? How are your studies?
Boring. Easy. Zayla Talan and Payden Telshan have the attention span of goats, and possibly the intelligence of them, so the tutors are constantly slowing down the rest of us so that they can catch up.
I'll see about getting you some private lessons, said Weir.
He coughed.
And it probably doesn't need to be said, but don't mention the goat thing outside of this room. Those are two houses we kind of need right now.
Deldry snorted.
It's obvious enough that I probably don't need to point it out anyway.
They shared a chuckle, and then Deldry stretched.
I saw Uncle this morning, she said conversationally. He mentioned that he spoke with you after you got back from Darntel. He didn't say it in a particularly happy way,
Weir grunted.
No progress in our talks with the Southern Houses, unfortunately, he said casually.
He trusted Deldry. She knew about his private oath stone, after all, but telling her what he'd done with it, what he'd learned, would only make her party to his illegal activities, not to mention put even more on her young shoulders than she already had to bear.
And we didn't talk about it, but Aaron says that there have been more reports coming in about Desriel massing their troops.
And more rumors from Nesk, too,
he added, glancing distractedly at the drawer that held Dizia's note. Just one more reason to worry about her. Deldry shifted uncomfortably.
About him, she said awkwardly. Augur Aaron. He seems awfully friendly sometimes.
Weir looked at her blankly, then suddenly guffawed. Deldry glowered.
It's not that funny.
No, it's not. It's just that he...
Weir shook his head.
He was close to Father, and we both know how much Father loved you. I think Aaron sort of sees us through Father's eyes. He's the same way with me sometimes.
He hadn't been able to bring himself to explain what had happened with Alosian and Aaron to anyone else. Only he, Caroline, and Aaron himself knew the truth. Deldry glared at him, and it occurred to Weir that perhaps she had been flattered by the attention. Then she grinned.
That makes sense, she said, looking vaguely relieved. Whenever he's talked to me, Father has come up a lot. Perhaps he just misses him.
Weir's smile faded.
We all do, he assured her. And Mother.
Deldry nodded at that, but Weir couldn't help but notice the tightening of her shoulders. The moment passed, and they chatted for a few minutes, the conversation casual and light, both of them enjoying the opportunity to talk unguardedly. Finally, though, Weir stirred, glancing reluctantly at the decay clock in the corner.
I have things I should do,
he admitted, standing with an only half-exaggerated groan.
Taris is waiting for me at the toll.
Delry stood too, giving her brother a quick hug.
Dinner tomorrow night?
I'll be there, Weir promised.
He smiled after his sister as she slipped out the door, marveling at how bright and cheerful she still managed to be despite everything that had happened. He knew that it was partly put on. The past couple of years had taken their toll, without a doubt. Still, it always raised his spirits to see. He informed Didos, the heavy-set guard standing outside his door, that he required an escort. That wasn't optional these days, even for such a short trip. And started toward the front gate. It was time to face the Shateth once again. Weir walked the sun-drenched streets of Elinilon, doing his best not to glare at the clumps of people, chatting and laughing and going about their daily business. It ground at him how everything here seemed so normal again. Elinilon's white streets had been all but cleansed of signs of the Blind's attack, with the vast majority of the buildings, at least the ones in the wealthier areas, completely rebuilt. Most who had fled the city had now returned, crowds thronging in the markets where vendors hawked their wares once again. Even the unease that had prevailed a year ago, when the attacks by the blind and then Isiliar had been fresh, seemed to have simply dissipated in the face of prolonged peace. Worse still were the blue lanterns he spotted hanging outside some houses. Early, but a reminder of just how close this year's Festival of Ravens truly was. The people who recognized him stared as he passed. That grated, too. He knew their whispers would be about politics, about how he had single-handedly caused the split with Tol Shen and the southern houses, or sometimes, even more frivolously, about whom he might marry. So few of them were concerned about the terrors still stalking the land somewhere to the north. None, certainly, were concerned that his best friend was trapped beyond the boundary, or that his other remaining childhood friend was going through unimaginable suffering to ensure that their safe little existence here remained intact. To them it was all in the past. The North had been close to lost, but that was over now. Most of the populace, from what he gathered, were still unclear on exactly how much of a threat there had even been. The general sense was that the time had come to focus on more immediate, more real issues. He exhaled heavily. If they only knew what was coming. The massive iron gates of Tol Athion soon loomed up ahead, and Weir slowed as he approached, quickly recognized by the half-dozen red-coated guards on duty. The doors were opened, though not before Weir and his accompanying guard underwent the same checks as everyone else. Once he was on Athian ground, even being the North Warden didn't exclude him from the rules. He endured the checks with practiced patience, understanding their necessity even if they were also an irritation. Ever since Caden and Tayris had used the travel stones to infiltrate Tol Athion, no unauthorized vessels had been allowed in. It was a sensible precaution, particularly given the Tol's weakened state after the blind's attack. One of the gifted's guards had disappeared inside upon recognizing him. By the time he was cleared to enter, Elder Ilanar himself, the leader of Tol Athian's council, was waiting just inside.
"Prince Torin,"
said the wiry older man, bowing slightly to show his respect.
"Nashrel?"
Circumstances had led to Weir's becoming fairly familiar with the man over the past year. They were far from friends, but their relationship wasn't as bad as it could have been, all things considered.
"Sorry to have dragged you away from whatever you were doing, but I'm just here to meet with Tayris today. He is expecting me."
"Of course. Before you do that, though, I thought we might have a quick word."
Nashrel hesitated, lowering his voice.
"It is regarding Augur Devries."
Weir glanced reluctantly down the cavernous, essence-lit main tunnel of the toll, but motioned for Nashrel to lead on. He had been anticipating this conversation since the incident with the shell. There was no benefit to delaying it. They set off through the spacious, always bustling tunnels of Tol Athion, Weir receiving more than one openly wary glance from red-cloaked men and women as they passed. As always, he felt the strange tension of being here. He was gifted, and the North Warden. He was bound by the Tol's laws rather than Andara's, but equally, if he had an Oathstone, could take command of anyone here. Simply change those laws if he wanted to. And every single gifted he passed knew it. It wasn't long before Nashrel was pulling him aside into a room just off the main passageway. A lock room, Weir noted with interest. Not unusual, necessarily, but clearly a deliberate choice. The elder waited for Weir to take a seat and then settled opposite, hesitating as he gathered his thoughts.
"As you know, Augur Devries has been staying with us over the past year thanks to her condition,"
he started, clearly choosing his words carefully. He knew that Weir and Ishel were on good terms, having made the journey back from the north together.
"Her presence has been welcome, of course, a privilege. And the benefits of it to the toll have been wonderful."
Weir sighed. "But you don't want her here any more," he finished flatly. Nashrel shook his head, looking irritated.
"I didn't say that. but lately she...
He trailed off, chewing his lip, searching for the words. Weir waited patiently. He knew exactly what had happened, shivered a little inside as he remembered the gibbering wreck Ishell had become when she'd attempted to accompany them to question Drass. They had set off on foot, intending to travel to Weir's family estate before using the travel stones to get to Prythe, hopefully establishing to any spies that his leaving was nothing nefarious. Ishell hadn't lasted until noon. Her connection to the Elatai seemed to be blocked by Tol Athian's walls, but the moment she left the protection of the structure, her mind came under constant assault. Aaron had done everything he could to minimize the problem before they left, but in the end, they had simply been forced to take her back. "Is she causing any problems?" asked Weir directly.
"Yes,"
Nashrell gestured helplessly.
"I don't wish to be rude, but after rumors of her display the other day got out, sire, things have been tense. There is a growing concern that her behavior may soon become that erratic regularly, regardless of whether she is behind these walls. Even a few weeks ago I would not have said anything of the sort, but whatever her condition is, it is worsening, and we simply have no way to combat it."
Weir said nothing. The problem was he knew that Nashrell was right. Ishell was getting worse. 6 months ago, she had been able to last more than a week outside the toll. "What do you suggest?" asked Weir.
"Nothing, for now."
Nashrell's hazel eyes held his gaze.
"That's why I wanted to make this chat an informal one. Olga Devries is a wonderful asset, and I happen to like her personally, too. Most of us do. And we have not stopped trying to find more information on her condition. But we are looking after her at your request, and I needed to let you know that we may not be adequately equipped to do so for much longer."
"Thank you. I appreciate that." There wasn't much more that Weir could say. The Gifted had no doubt made a genuine effort to help Ishell. It was in their best interest, after all. "Give me some time, a few days at least. I'll see if I can come up with a plan." Nashrell looked relieved.
"Now, I should let you press on to see the representative. He told me you have some solemn business to attend to this morning."
Weir covered his confusion with a nod, unsure to what the Elder was referring, but assuming that Tayris had given some excuse for their meeting. "Thank you, Elder Ilanar. I can find my way from here," he said politely. It wasn't long before he was walking along the tunnel to Tayris's study. He paused at the door next to it, a combination of nostalgia and sadness washing over him as he gazed into the empty room. Asha's old study. He half expected to see her look up from her desk and wave him inside with that bright smile of hers. There were only boxes now. The elders were using it for storage, apparently. Weir had rebuffed Tolathian's several requests to assign a new junior representative to the palace, not directly, of course, but more ignored them by making sure that he had more important things to be dealing with. Tayris preferred to work alone anyway. Some day soon, though, Weir would have to allow the council to make Asha's replacement official. Fates, but he hoped that she was well. Debian, too, wherever he was. When he opened the door to Tayris's office, Weir found Aaron and Ishell in the process of standing, apparently just finishing their conversation with the representative.
"How did your meeting with Kevrin go?"
asked Aaron immediately once the door was shut. Weir ignored Aaron's familiarity, though he saw Tayris's eyebrows rise slightly.
"Well enough. He wasn't pleased with everything I'd done," he conceded, playing down his uncle's anger just a touch. "But there won't be consequences from him, at least. He appreciates the value of the information that we got."
"And the plan?"
asked Tayris. Weir shrugged.
"He agreed. He'll have people spread word of another suspected attack, make sure that there are extra ships on standby in the harbor, quietly prepare as many areas of the city as possible for a clean evacuation. That sort of thing." He eyed Aaron.
He did say that he wanted to talk to you directly about it, though. Any idea why? Asked Aaron, sounding more curious than worried.
Just for clarity on what is being spread, I suspect. Weir grimaced.
He wasn't feeling particularly inclined to share more than was necessary with me, to be honest.
Ishell cleared her throat.
She was a stunning young woman, but the dark circles beneath her eyes and a generally exhausted, unkempt appearance betrayed some of what she had been going through recently.
If that's the worst of his reaction, we should count ourselves fortunate.
Agreed, Weir coughed, glancing across at her.
No,
said Ishell before he could ask. There was no irritation to her tone, though he wouldn't have blamed her.
There's been nothing from Davian or Fessy. No sense of them at all.
She bit her lip.
Not even the other day when...
Weir nodded quickly, accepting the statement without pressing, though it still hurt as the slight glimmer of hope that always sparked when he saw Ishell faded once again. He couldn't bring himself to believe that his friend was dead. He'd made that mistake once before. He refused to do it again. But a year was a long time, and Ishell had described the wastelands of Talon Gol in vivid detail. Still, Davian was resourceful, and Aaron constantly assured him that Fessy was as well. And they were augurs, of course. That didn't hurt their chances. Ishell stretched absently.
I really should get some rest, I think,
she said abruptly, the shadows beneath her eyes seeming more pronounced than ever.
My head is...
She trailed off, staring into nothing for a few uncomfortably long seconds before shaking herself, giving the others a wry smile.
Sorry.
No need to apologize, Tayrus assured her.
Aaron lent Ishell his arm as she swayed.
Nothing we need to know?
He asked Weir, then sighed as Weir shook his head.
Well, if the king wants to see me, then I suppose I should get over there.
He made sure Ishell was steady, then headed for the door alongside her.
Aaron?
Weir shifted uncomfortably.
Just remember who you're talking to when you meet with him.
Aaron lingered, dipping his head in understanding before slipping out. Another effect of his having controlled Illosian for so long was that Aaron tended to think of the king as his brother, often more than he thought of him as his liege. It had resulted in some interesting slips of propriety early on. Once Aaron had shut the door, Weir turned to Tayrus.
Nashrell pulled me aside when I got here.
Tayrus scowled.
Ishell?
When Weir nodded, he cursed under his breath.
A man's not a fool, but fates take him if he doesn't let the council pressure him too far sometimes. I assume they want to get rid of her?
They're worried that she's going to snap, admitted Weir.
Her little display when we brought her back didn't go unnoticed. Tayrus grunted.
That doesn't much surprise me.
Weir indicated his agreement, shivering as he remembered the state Ishell had been in when they had finally managed to drag her back into the toll. Eyes red and wild, strange black lines striping her body, screaming nonsense, flecks of foam at her mouth. Half a day that had taken. Perhaps 8 hours outside the protection of the toll, and she had been reduced to little more than a feral animal. They had managed to get her back to her rooms without too many of the gifted seeing. It had been late at night, and they had done everything they could to avoid notice. But the damage had been done. Ishell's deteriorating state had been the cause of much concern even before the event. Weir had no doubt that word of what had happened had spread through the toll like wildfire.
There's nowhere else to take her, though, observed Weir. She needs this place.
We'll sit down with her and Aaron soon, and discuss our options,
Tayrus assured him.
Aaron won't hesitate to put himself against the council to help her. That may be enough. Or we might be able to convince the assembly to amend the amnesty again, make it so that if they are to be in charge of the augurs, they must accept all of them, no matter their condition.
Weir nodded. The assembly had decreed that Tol Athian was now the sanctioned destination for augurs, stripping Tol Shen of the right, for what that was worth these days. Taras exhaled.
"We have other things to worry about right now, anyway."
Nashrell mentioned a solemn purpose to what we were doing.
"Ah," Taras looked apologetic. "I told him that you would be paying your respects to Elder Olin today."
Weir stared at him, nonplussed. "Elder Olin is buried here?"
"Entombed," Taras shifted. "The tombs are normally off-limits to everyone but family. But given your position and the role the Elder played in your protection and development in Kaladel, Nashrell agreed that it would be appropriate."
"Oh," Weir shook his head somewhat dazedly. "Thank you. I would actually like that." He'd never had the opportunity to say goodbye to anyone from Kaladel, not properly. Elder Olin had not only taught him much of what he knew about being gifted, but had been the one to keep his secret so faithfully over the years. It had cost the man his life. He frowned slightly as he saw Taras's expression, and opened his mouth to ask.
"I'll explain when we're down there," said Taras firmly. "When it's secure."
Weir resisted the urge to sigh. Taras had told him about Tolathian's remembering not long after his return to Ilinilon, a kind of ward built into the stone of the Tol itself. Anything that was said within range of the remembering could be recalled by one of the council if they knew the time and place of the conversation. Recalled precisely, as if they had been standing right there when it happened. It was one of the council's most jealously guarded secrets and something Taras himself had been reluctant to reveal, even to Weir.
"Then let's go," he said.
Weir followed Taras out of his office and downward, toward the center of the toll, farther beneath Ilin Tora.
"Has Aaron checked you this week?"
asked Taras absently as they walked.
"Of course."
One of their first priorities upon Weir's return to the capital last year, as the committee overseeing him drew up its charter, had been to do everything possible to protect him from control by one of the Venerate, Signer, or even another rogue augur like Rowan. That included constant attention to his mental shield and regular assessments by Aaron.
"Good," Taras waved away Weir's look. "I'm not concerned. It's just nice to have the confirmation."
They walked for a while, Weir letting Taras take the lead. There seemed to be more gifted than the last time Weir had been here. That made sense, he supposed, with plenty of gifted refugees from the northern schools having made their home in Tol Athian recently. Soon enough, Taras was steering them down a deserted side tunnel. Several twists and turns later, they came to a heavy-looking oak door. The scarred man drew a key from his pocket, which slid into the lock and turned with a well-oiled click. A set of stairs led them downward, much to Weir's surprise. He knew that there was a lower section to the toll. It was the only route to the sanctuary, after all, but he had assumed that everything beyond the main floor had remained abandoned. Then they reached another flight of stairs. "Fates, how deep does this place go?" he wondered aloud as they began their next descent. The stairs had a different appearance from those leading from the level above, the steps thinner and longer, providing a more gradual descent. They were still made of pure white stone, though, still very evidently created by the builders.
"The toll?" Taras shrugged at him. "There are maps for the first 5 levels. Beyond that, nobody really knows. The paths are dangerous, and the essence lighting doesn't extend that far down. In fact, after a while, using essence to light the way doesn't even seem to work. There have been a few efforts in my lifetime to map it, especially during the siege years, but whole groups of gifted have disappeared down there. Most of it's been shut away for decades. Before that, it was entirely sealed off for centuries."
5 levels?
Weir began reassessing his understanding of the toll's size.
Of which we know, repeated Tarus. They're not all as large as the upper level. They were mostly used for storage back in the days of the war. He gestured reassuringly. The tomb is on this level. Weir nodded slightly, still a little dazed, as he followed Tarus along the corridor until they finally reached the end, passing through an open doorway. The chamber beyond stood in sharp contrast to the dimly lit Spartan passages outside, the long room opening up into a vast, decorated, warmly illuminated area. The walls were lined with square stone doors, each only a few feet high and wide. Weir couldn't see where they ended. As he looked closer, he realized that each door had a name on it, written in essence, which in turn gave the room its permanent, gentle glow. Fountains flowed at sporadic intervals along the wall, though from where they could possibly be drawing water, or where that water was going, Weir had no idea. The bodies are all kept here? Weir had been vaguely aware that there was a tomb somewhere in Tol Athian, but it was rarely discussed. Only council members and other honored elders were afforded a burial here.
When there are bodies to entomb, yes.
Most of the doorways close to the entrance had names on them.
Fates, is that really Caravar Trelaes?
Asked Weir, spotting a name. The man was a legend from the time of the Great War more than 1,000 years ago.
Well, it's his body.
Tarus scratched his chin, giving a shrug to Weir's look.
It was important in his time, sire, but there's a reason the builders created this place. Everyone's equal here. There's no place of honor, no seniority, no rank. None of these graves can become a shrine.
His gaze traveled the room.
I've always liked that. Great people should be remembered for their great deeds, but strangers visiting their graves strikes me as odd.
Tarus shut the tomb door behind them, then glanced around.
We can talk freely now. This place doesn't have any remembering.
Weir breathed out.
So, why are we really here?
Tarus gestured, somewhat sheepishly.
You can pay your respects to Elder Olin, he assured Weir. But Hrethgar is entombed down here too, or is supposed to be, he added pensively. It only occurred to me yesterday that I could check. This was the best way I could think to get us down here.
Ah.
Weir felt the true purpose of the visit cheapened it somewhat, but he couldn't blame Tarus. The representative had been fretting about Drass's revelations since the moment he'd heard them.
And if he's not here?
Then we have one more thing to question the Shateth about.
Weir nodded grimly.
This is Elder Olin's tomb, said Tarus, arriving in front of a door with the elder's name glowing gently on it. Please pay your respects, sire, then come and find me.
Weir waited for Tarus to wander farther down the long room before turning toward the square marked with Elder Olin's name. He touched the name, and flashes of images ran through his head. He saw the elder laughing with his students, teaching classes, striding through the courtyard in Caladel with his robes streaming behind him as he went to discipline someone. There were more, moments more than anything else, but enough to bring back the memory of the man who had taught him and Davian and Asha for so many years, who had shown them so much kindness as they'd grown from children to young adults. Minutes passed, and when Weir finally lowered his hand again, there was a genuine smile on his face, and a warmth, albeit still tinged with loss, in his chest. He took a second to collect himself, then walked over to where Tarus was standing.
How does it do that? He asked quietly.
Tarus shrugged.
Taps into your memories of the departed somehow, he said. Usually seems to find the good ones, if you have them. If you put your hand against the grave of someone you'd never met, say old Caravar over there, nothing would happen. And if it was someone you'd barely known, you'd probably get a flash of their face, but not much more.
He smiled sadly.
but it is nice to remember the lost more clearly sometimes.
It is, agreed Weir, swallowing a lump in his throat. It seemed like an age ago that he'd been at Caladel, but in reality it was only 2 years, and that after living there for 3. That school had been his home, and his bonds with the people there had been as strong as any in his life before or since. It had been a simpler, much happier time in his life, probably the happiest that he could remember.
Terris gave him a sympathetic pat on the shoulder, then beckoned for Weir to follow him to another door on the far wall.
"Rethgar Talan," Weir read, then looked at Terris, who tentatively reached out and touched the name, shuddering and closing his eyes.
"What did you see?" Weir asked as Terris's eyes opened again. The elder made a face.
"My memories of Rethgar are..." he sighed. "I didn't know him well. My memories of him are mainly from the end. He was the first one, the first volunteer to be made into a Shateth. We didn't really know what we were doing. Layman did his best to make sure he understood the knowledge Jacarus had given him, but..."
He shrugged.
"His death was not a pleasant one. We very nearly gave up then and there."
There was silence. Terris glanced to the side, seeing the expression on Weir's face and interpreting it correctly.
"And we should have," he agreed heavily, as if suddenly recognizing the nonchalance of his previous tone. "But I'll say it again, sire. The days before the war were a different time. Chaotic, close to lawless. You have to remember that the augurs were all but in hiding, and the gifted... more and more of them were using their power to take advantage of regular people."
He cast another glance at Weir, this one containing a familiar, unconscious hint of pleading for understanding, for forgiveness.
"They thought that it was acceptable, too, that they had a right to do it. Fates, when we imprisoned our own for their crimes, mobs of gifted started forming to protest. The councils were losing control, where they were even trying to keep it in the first place. Things were getting bloody, and we needed a weapon to scare our own people back into submission before we had a civil war on our hands. We needed a threat, and..."
He trailed off, as if suddenly recognizing how defensive he was sounding.
"None of which is an excuse," he eventually finished softly.
"I know."
Weir said the words gently in response to both Terris's explanation and his last statement. He'd heard much of it before, both from Terris and Layman. Both men were clearly haunted by the decisions they'd made back then, even as they desperately tried to contextualize them. He turned his attention back to the door in front of them, choosing to focus on the task at hand.
"So now we just see if Rethgar's inside?" he asked, a touch queasily.
Though they were just bones, vessels emptied of everything that made them important, it still felt disrespectful at best.
"How do we do that?"
"I'm not sure. I haven't exactly been in this position before," Terris admitted, sounding relieved that the conversation had moved on. "And it didn't seem like something that I could ask about."
He closed his eyes, frowning in concentration as he examined the tomb.
"I think it's a vessel," he concluded. "Just a latch, a touch of essence here, and..."
The stone shivered, as if reluctant, and then sluggishly ground aside. Weir and Terris peered inside as the warm essence light of the room revealed the interior of the tomb.
"There are 2 bodies in there," observed Weir, bemused.
The corpses were perfectly preserved, their faces unmarked, though the bodies themselves were badly damaged.
"Is either of them Rethgar?"
He glanced across at Terris and froze. The scarred man's hands were shaking as he physically leaned away from the corpses, his face white.
"No, neither of them is Rethgar," Terris said hoarsely.
Weir swallowed.
"Who are they, then?"
Terris didn't respond for a long moment, gazing at the faces as if transfixed.
"They're us,"
he said eventually.
They're Thel and I.
Chapter 19. We are hurried to keep pace with Tayrus, the elder man's ground-eating strides a good indication of just how rattled he truly was.
How did Hrethgar make their faces look like yours?
It hadn't been immediately obvious to Weir. He hadn't known Tayrus before the scars that now covered his features, but he had been able to see it once Tayrus had explained. Could see the likeness, even if the man lying in the tomb was a good 20 years younger. The other man's face, Thel's, apparently, Weir didn't recognize at all, but that was unsurprising. When Thel had changed his identity to Layman Cardai, even his physical form had been remade by Jacaris.
"I don't know. Shapeshifting of some kind, I suppose," said Tayrus, not slowing. "If Hrethgar actually has a Shateth's powers, even some of them, but isn't as restricted in what he can do."
He shook his head uneasily.
"Whatever the case, the message is clear enough."
"But those bodies are from 20 years ago," pointed out Weir. "If it was a revenge he wanted, and he's that powerful, surely you would know about it by now."
Tayrus grunted.
"One of the many questions we're going to ask our friends in black," he muttered.
He glanced around at the walls, wincing.
"And that's enough said until we get there."
Weir stared blankly for a second and then screwed up his face. They'd both been rattled enough that they'd forgotten about the toll's remembering. They walked for a minute more in tense silence. The Shateth were being kept in the depths as well, though on a higher level. The emptiness of the toll here, combined with their unsettling discovery in the tomb, made Weir feel almost as on edge as Tayrus looked. Finally, they came to a doorway, and Tayrus stopped in front of it with heavy certainty.
"Here?"
Weir shifted, bracing himself. He hadn't seen the Shateth since the attack almost a year ago. Tayrus nodded, opening the door and gesturing Weir through.
"This section of the toll is special. It is where they were created,"
he explained, slipping through and shutting it behind him.
"The conduit runs past here, but it's different from the sanctuary. It's shielded, completely safe for us. Those same mechanisms interfere with the Shateth's ability to touch Khan. They're weakened here, barely able to stand."
Weir raised an eyebrow.
"That seems a very specific thing to know."
Tayrus glanced around, the slight relaxing of his shoulders indicating a release of tension.
"Layman knew that it would have that effect on them. It was part of the knowledge Jacaris gave him."
He rubbed his forehead.
"We're outside the range of the remembering again, by the way."
"I gathered."
Weir gazed around uncertainly. They were in a small circular antechamber of some kind, smooth white walls curving around to meet at another doorway 20 feet away. "Aren't there any guards?"
"Too risky. Only the Council know that the Shateth are still alive, and only a few specific members know where they're being kept."
Tayrus waved away Weir's concerned expression.
"No need to worry. We have someone checking down here 3 times a day, and the toll has a whole raft of defenses for this section. It's probably going to take me a half hour just to get us through them."
He strode toward the far door and then faltered.
"What is it?"
Weir asked. In answer, Tayrus touched the door lightly. It swung silently open.
"And what of you, Sicario?"
A voice echoed from the other room, quiet but clear.
"Is your answer the same as your brother's?"
Tayrus froze, gripping Weir's arm warningly and holding a finger to his lips. He leaned over, putting his mouth close to Weir's ear.
"There is not supposed to be anyone here,"
he breathed, the older man's every muscle tense as a rasping answer to the question they had heard, this one inaudible, came from the other room. Weir indicated his understanding. The two men positioned themselves at either side of the now open door.
"That is disappointing,"
lamented the unfamiliar voice as they peered through the entrance and into the lit room. The chamber within was not the uniform white of everywhere else in the toll, but rather little more than a cavern. The walls were a matte black, rough-hewn,
the facade sharp with jagged, vaguely misshapen edges. As if whoever had built the place had left it unfinished. Weir's stomach churned as he took in the scene within. At the far end of the chamber, the two Chateth hung, manacled to the wall, their hoods pushed back to reveal deathly white, wrinkled skin and horribly deformed features. Thin trickles of black, what Weir assumed was blood, dripped from the mouth of one, though whether it was from some recent injury or not, he had no idea. Neither creature struggled as the man standing in front of them watched, arms crossed, looking relaxed, albeit annoyed. He was tall, slim, with an unsettlingly competent bearing given what he was facing. The man turned to face the entrance as Weir and Tayris both jerked back to avoid being seen.
"Please, join me," the stranger said in a vague amusement. "I have been meaning to speak with you again anyway, Prince Torin."
Weir swallowed, mind racing, but silently motioned for Tayris to wait before walking out into the light of the second room as confidently as he could. When he'd turned, Weir had spotted something else about the stranger. The man was a shadow.
"What are you doing here?"
Weir asked sharply. "Do the Council know you're talking to these things?"
"Bah!" the man gestured irritably. "No time for that. I'd have to spend weeks just proving to that dolt Eleanor who I am. No, thank you."
His eyes narrowed as he looked at Weir. "You, on the other hand, seem to have recognized me."
"Signer."
Once he had seen the black markings on the man's face, it hadn't been hard to extrapolate.
"The real you, this time, not someone you're controlling."
Signer chuckled.
"Well done."
His gaze shifted over Weir's shoulder.
"And Teresar," he added quietly this time. "It has been a while, my old friend. Jacaris."
Tayris walked forward slowly, staring at Signer as if looking at a ghost.
"It really is you, isn't it?"
His voice held a melange of emotions, from wonder to sadness to fury.
"It is," Signer gave the older man a tight smile. "Fates."
Tayris's expression hardened.
"Fates, Jacaris. We trusted you."
Signer gazed at Tayris, looking sorrowful. He clearly knew exactly what Tayris was referring to.
"I know," he said eventually.
A rasping laugh interrupted him before he could say more.
"Atarin Telteth, what a delightful reunion,"
the Chateth on the right sneered, its voice like stones being ground together.
"Two of the men who made our passage to this world possible."
Signer rolled his eyes, not bothering to turn and face the creature.
"These monsters shouldn't be here,"
he said bluntly, addressing Tayris more than Weir.
"How were they captured?"
"First tell us what you're doing here," responded Weir pointedly.
Signer gave an exasperated sigh.
"Investigating."
He jerked his head toward the Chateth.
"Perhaps we can exchange notes later?"
Weir considered, then grudgingly indicated his assent. The augur clearly didn't want to say too much in front of the creatures, which made sense.
"They attacked me. That's how we caught them," he said eventually.
He lifted his shirt slightly, revealing the pink half-healed line across his stomach.
"About a week after I got back to the city, after Asha..."
He trailed off, glancing at the Chateth warily. It probably wasn't the best idea to give them information they didn't have, even if it seemed unimportant. Signer seemed to understand what he was talking about anyway.
"But how?"
he pressed.
"The entire council was there," explained Tayris. "As was I. More than half of us died in the fight."
Signer glanced behind at the manacled creatures, then gestured to the opposite side of the room. Weir and Tayris nodded their agreement, and the three of them moved out of earshot before Tayris began explaining the sequence of events. How the Chateth had burst into the chamber and arrowed for Weir, giving him almost no time to react or defend himself. How essence walls had lit the room and a hail of energy had rained down on the creatures,
one of which had still managed to battle through a dozen gifted to stab Weir in the stomach with its dark, pulsing dagger. Weir couldn't fill in the gaps after that. He had woken to the worried ministrations of the gifted, who, despite their best efforts, were unable to fully heal the wound. But he had heard the story several times now, how the entire council had stood against them, how they had activated the protections of Tol Athian's council room itself, the builder's internal defenses springing to life for the first time in known memory. The Shatteth had been restrained down here, and while there had been much debate about simply killing them, both Weir and Tayrus had advocated it, the council had ultimately seen them as a valuable resource, both for information and, Weir suspected, because they vaguely hoped they might one day be turned back under their control. Siner listened with narrowed eyes, assessing, saying nothing until Tayrus was finished. Then he glanced back over at the Shatteth, who had remained silent throughout, hanging from the wall and watching the three men with dead eyes.
"Is it not as we told you, Shalician?"
called the one on the left, noting Siner's look. Siner showed no reaction to the creature, though he looked pointedly at Tayrus and Weir.
"It is."
Tayrus scowled.
"You doubt something about the account?"
"No." Siner kept his voice low.
"My concern is that they were captured at all."
"They killed a dozen of the most powerful gifted in Andara," pointed out Weir, "and made it into the middle of Tol Athian to do so."
"But doesn't that strike you as odd?" Siner pressed. "These are not animals, Prince Torin. They are not banes, clumsy weapons that the Venerate would try to just smash against their enemies. I have no doubt that you were a target, but..." He shook his head. "If you were truly their only target, why attack at the very center of Tol Athian, and while you were with the entire council? Why not pick you off somewhere outside the protections of the Tol?" He stared at Tayrus pointedly, plainly expecting the scarred man to answer.
"Of course we considered that," said Weir irritably before Tayrus could respond. "But that council meeting was one of the first times my whereabouts were widely known since I got back here. It was only made public because it was assumed to be safe."
"Not to mention the statement the attack made. The effects we still feel from it," added Tayrus. "Everyone in the Tol knows that this is not necessarily a safe haven now, even with the sanctuary entrance guarded. The time and energy that have gone into strengthening the defenses here, when they could have been put toward more important things, have been significant."
Siner considered.
"Perhaps you are right," he conceded reluctantly. "But Telkomar sent me here to get information from these creatures, and that is what I intend to do."
"You've seen Caden?"
asked Weir immediately, brightening. He leaned forward excitedly.
"How is he? Where is he?"
He had not seen his friend since the Blind's attack on Elin Ilan nearly 2 years earlier, though he knew Asha had seen him since in Dylanus. Siner studied Weir curiously.
"He is well enough. He is attempting to retrieve Lycanius from the Venerate," the black-veined man said. "And to save your friend."
Weir's heart leaped.
"Davian's alive?"
"He is."
Siner seemed privately amused about something in the conversation.
"I do not know much more than that," he added quickly, seeing the questions on the tip of Weir's tongue. "He helped free Telkomar from Ilshangath del Teth, and now is being held by the Venerate. That is all Telkomar told me before sending me here."
Siner paused.
"And on that subject, why are you here? I assume that you didn't come all the way down here for casual conversation."
Weir glanced across at Tayrus, who hesitated.
"Do you remember Hrethgar?"
Tayrus asked. Tayrus quickly explained what they had learned from Drass, then moved swiftly through their subsequent findings. Siner listened with a steadily deepening frown, which changed to an expression of outright concern as Tayrus described Hrethgar's tomb.
"I'll take it," he muttered. "An Escherai? Telkomar needs to know."
"Escherai?"
Weir looked at the other two men blankly, but from Tayrus's grimace, Weir was the only one who didn't know the word.
An unbound Shateth, one with more agency, free to share its knowledge, to use its connections to the Darklands without limitations. There has only ever been one other, and the information on it is slim at best.
Tyrus licked his lips as Siner nodded approvingly. This was evidently coming from the memories the Augur had stored within Tyrus.
Their only limitation is the body they inhabit. The more power they use, the more it will break down, until ultimately it will just disintegrate.
That's not the worst of it, murmured Siner bleakly. Its creation will have taken one of the connections to the forge.
There was silence. Siner looked up at them, glowering at their blank looks as if only just remembering whom he was talking to.
It's your missing Augur, he clarified impatiently.
And now we're going to have to find a way to kill it.
Another delightful side effect of your misusing what I left to you, Thelen Niam.
The last word was directed squarely at Tyrus. The scarred man blanched for a second before his expression darkened.
No. No! Your betrayal is what led us to grasp at that particular straw, he said, ire raising his voice sharply. Fates, at the time we thought that maybe making the Shateth was why you gave us that information.
I gave Thel every scrap of research I had on the Darklands. The Shateth were one piece amongst thousands, said Siner, matching Tyrus's tone. Just as I gave you everything I knew of the Boundary and Niam everything I'd learned of our enemy. I knew I wouldn't be able to risk showing myself again for years. It was all meant to inform, to ensure you had the most complete picture possible of what Andara was facing. It was meant to help you and the Tolls prepare, so that you could actually help when the time came.
His expression hardened.
You were the three gifted who I knew would survive the war. I assumed that together you would be able to convince everyone of the danger. Instead, you created these,
he gestured back at the manacled Shateth in disgust,
and got yourselves disgraced before the rebellion even started.
He locked eyes with Tyrus, who glared back defiantly, their surroundings temporarily forgotten. Then Siner sighed, shaking his head.
We don't have time for this. I need to ask some more pointed questions about Hrethgar, he said grimly, looking around at the Shateth. You may stay or leave, but do not interfere.
Weir coughed, almost unwilling to remind the two men that he was there. They have already been questioned. A lot.
Not by me.
Siner looked like he was bracing himself for something unpleasant. Tyrus gave him a black look.
These are the Toll's prisoners. What happens to them while in our custody is our responsibility.
The tension in his voice suggested that he was still working hard not to pursue the previous argument with Siner.
Then stay and observe. This will be painful for them, but it is not torture.
Siner peered at Tyrus.
I am the only one who has the ability and knowledge to do this, who can get real answers. And I am going to do it whether you try to stop me or not.
Tyrus and Weir exchanged a glance. Weir's stomach churned, but he nodded.
Do it, he muttered.
Siner strode back over to the Shateth.
Sicario, Dionidius,
he smiled cheerlessly at the creatures.
Time to talk.
The pale scarred faces regarded the Augur with almost identical sneers.
Kaloran Sa Etemiel. We have already answered your questions,
said the one on the left, the one called Sicario, Weir thought.
Yet if you have more, we are of course pleased to cooperate,
rasped the other. It glanced across at Tyrus.
Particularly for you, Tyrusar.
I want to know about Hrethgar, said Siner, ignoring the words.
The one Tyrusar killed? Asked Dionidius mockingly. The one he and Taranor sacrificed to keep secret their mistake,
the other crowed, its black-eyed, empty gaze fixed on Tyrus.
Surely there is someone here better to ask?
Siner sighed.
Here is the thing, Sicario, he said. You obviously believe that you have me at a disadvantage right now. You are thousands of years old, no doubt bound against revealing your purpose, and you think that I am just an augur.
He smiled slightly, as if he knew something that the Shateth did not.
In those thousands of years, though, he continued, did you ever hear of the Ath?
Dionidius rasped a laugh, though it had lost some of its bite this time.
You are not her.
No.
Siner closed his eyes, stretching out his hand toward the Shateth.
But she has been teaching me.
Dionidius screamed. Weir and Taris both leaped in alarm at the horrific ear-splitting sound, the unnatural screeches of pain ricocheting around the enclosed space, assaulting their senses. The other Shateth, Sicario, shouted something furiously in Dorisian, obviously demanding that the augur stop, but Siner didn't react to any of it. Weir shuddered, hands over his ears, as he watched Dionidius. The Shateth's back was arched, its mouth so wide its pallid face looked stretched almost to the breaking point as it shrieked, every muscle trembling and convulsing as it thrashed maniacally against its manacles. Weir tensed as tiny clouds of dust burst from the wall where the metal was secured, concerned that the creature was about to somehow, impossibly, break free with sheer demented strength.
Stop!
Weir couldn't take it anymore. Regardless of the creature's nature, it was impossible not to feel just how much pain it was in.
Siner, just—
He trailed off as Taris gripped him firmly by the arm. Weir turned to the scarred man, who shook his head silently. Weir pushed Taris's